I loved the emotional rush of being scared. I still do, of course. I don't go out much to haunted houses, but I still love good, old-fashioned, scary stories.
Listener discretion is advised.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Diane Lynn Marie Knight was born in a small city outside of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, on New Year's Day, 1951. She went by the name Lynn. Lynn had two sisters and a brother. At some point, the family moved to the picturesque town of Stratford, Ontario. The city is famous for its productions of Shakespeare plays. Lynn went to nursing school, and after she graduated, many places needed nurses. She chose to move to Torrance, California, which is about 20 miles southwest of downtown Los Angeles. She got a job in the neonatal unit at the Providence Little Company of Mary Medical Center. Lynn was a dedicated worker who came in early, stayed late, and took double shifts. Lynn's friends and family described her as gregarious and outgoing. She was also described as a tomboy, and she liked sports like water skiing, downhill skiing, scuba diving, marathon running, racquetball, and volleyball. Lynn had a lot of male friends. When she dated, she preferred handsome, professional men. In late August 1979, 29-year-old Lynn was living in a small studio apartment that was built off a garage in Torrance. Early that summer, Sony's Walkman hit the market in Japan. On August 10th, Michael Jackson released his album, Off the Wall. It was his fifth studio album, and it proved to be his breakout album. Some critics consider it to be one of the greatest albums ever. However, none of his singles reached number one on the Billboard charts that year. For most of July and part of August, Bad Girls by Donna Summers was number one on the Billboard charts. At the end of August, My Sharona by The Knack was the number one song. It would go on to be the biggest single of the year.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
Early that summer, Lynn was dating a 32-year-old man named Richard Frank, who was the publisher of a community newspaper. But Frank thought that the relationship was getting too intense too quickly. So after a few months, he broke it off. Near the end of the summer, Frank and Lynn ran into each other. They talked, and they decided to get back together. On August 28th, 1979, Lynn had an ex-boyfriend, Joe Giarrusso, over for dinner at her apartment. Giarrusso left at about 11:30. Lynn was supposed to work the next morning. In a few days, she was planning to travel back to Ontario, Canada, to be a bridesmaid in her sister's wedding. Hours after Joe Giarrusso left, a neighbor heard a horrifying scream that came from Lynn's apartment. He described it as a squeal. Two officers responded, and they found a gruesome crime scene. In 2015, when Keith Morrison interviewed the former lead investigator on the case for an episode of Dateline, the investigator was still disturbed by the crime scene. He got choked up and said it was the most challenging case he ever worked on. Lynn's dead body was lying on her bed, which was drenched in blood. She had been stabbed 15 times in the back and the chest. Her neck had also sustained deep cuts, and initially, the investigators weren't sure what weapon caused the injuries. When the medical examiner moved Lynn's body, he found something under it. It was a homemade garrote, which is a wire with two handles at the end, usually used for strangulation. The two handles were sawed off from something that looked like a broom handle. A hole had been drilled in the center of them, and a wire went through both holes. Whoever made the garrote took their time and were meticulous when making it. The wooden handles were sandpapered, and the wire had been tied up to ensure it wouldn't break during the murder. In fact, the wire had been double-looped. The medical examiner would later determine that the cause of death was the stab wounds and not the garrote wounds. The medical examiner also found semen from two men. However, since it was 1979, DNA testing was not available. The police looked around the apartment and determined only three things had been stolen. Lynn's wallet and her keys were missing. That night, she had been wearing a pendant on a chain. The pendant and the clasp was found in the apartment, but the chain was gone. The police talked to the neighbor who called 911. He said they saw a slim man with curly dark hair carrying a dark satchel walking quickly away from Lynn's apartment. But he didn't get a good look at his face. Just hours after the murder, the police arrested a young man who was seen in Lynn's neighborhood. The young man, who was slim with curly hair, was running near Lynn's apartment. He was carrying a black bag. It also appeared they had blood on his hands. But the police were able to clear him as a suspect shortly after he was arrested. It turned out that it wasn't blood on his hands. Instead, it was most likely something like dirt or paint. Lynn's body was transported to Stratford, Ontario, where her funeral was held. She was buried in her bridesmaid's dress. Her sister had to postpone her wedding. The police believe that Lynn knew her killer and she was specifically targeted. They believe this because there was a sense of overkill with the garroted throat and the 15 stab wounds. Also, Lynn's apartment was hidden. If you were to drive down that road, you probably would not have known it was there. So the police suspected that the killer knew about the apartment because he had been there before. The police started interviewing Lynn's friends. They quickly eliminated Richard Frank as a suspect because he had an airtight alibi. Joe Giarrusso was also questioned. The police noticed he had some cuts on his hands. He claimed that when he left Lynn's apartment, she was still alive. When she was killed, he was at home in bed with his girlfriend. He claimed he got the cuts on his hands at work. Giarrusso and his girlfriend both took polygraph exams. They both passed, and he was eliminated as a suspect. About 2 weeks after the murder, Lynn's family traveled to Torrance to collect her things. They happened to notice that something else was missing. It was the invitation to her sister's wedding. They talked to the lead investigator, and he said that the invitation wasn't missing. He saw it in the apartment. It had been crumpled up and thrown away in the trash. Lynn's family knew she would never do that, so they concluded that the killer did it. But why would the killer crumple up and throw away a wedding invitation? They concluded that the killer was mad that he wasn't going to the wedding with Lynn. Without an arrest, the investigation seemed like it was stalling. So the police talked to Richard Frank again. He told them about an odd incident that happened when they first started dating. One of Lynn's ex-boyfriends came over to her home because he wanted to return a lamp. The man started screaming at Lynn and then threw the lamp against the wall. Lynn had explained that it was her ex-boyfriend, Doug, and she had been trying to distance herself from him. The police talked to Lynn's sister, Donna, to see if she had heard of an ex-boyfriend of Lynn's named Doug. She said she had. Doug was supposed to be Lynn's date to the wedding, but then she broke up with him. The investigators thought that this made Doug a plausible suspect. They looked in Lynn's address book, and there was only one Doug, Douglas Bradford. The investigators interviewed Bradford. He told them that he and Lynn had dated, but they broke up, and he had lost contact with her. He said that when they did date, he bought her several gifts. He said he had helped pay for a necklace. This got the attention of the investigators, because one of the few things that was stolen was a chain that Lynn was wearing. Bradford was asked where he was at the time of the murder, and he had an odd alibi. Bradford explained he was a member of a boat club. He claimed that in the early morning hours, he was sailing on the Pacific Ocean. He said he left just after midnight and he got back to the dock around 3 a.m. He said that he took out a 30-foot racing boat that weighed 2 tons. He said that the boat didn't have a motor and then the wind died, so he had to paddle back to the boating club. The investigators went to Bradford's boating club. They had a record of him signing out the boat. The police then talked to Lynn's neighbors. Bradford drove a unique car, a red Datsun 280Z. Several of the neighbors saw that car driving back and forth past Lynn's apartment in the days before the murder. The police got a search warrant for Bradford's car. They examined it, and it was spotless. It smelled and looked like it had just been detailed. After Bradford's car was searched, he stopped cooperating with the investigators. The police wanted to charge Bradford with Lynn's murder, but the district attorney did not think that there was enough evidence to arrest him. So the case eventually went cold. In 1982, it was officially labeled inactive.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy, who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
Throughout the 1980s and the 1990s, Lynn's sister, Donna, wrote letters to the Torrance Police Department, the Governor of California, the FBI, and anyone she thought might be able to help solve her sister's case. Every few years, investigators would reopen the case, but just like the original investigators, they didn't have any luck cracking the case. In 1997, the Torrance Police Department opened a cold case unit. One of the first cases they looked at was the murder of Lynn Knight. Over the next decade, they worked on the case. Like the original investigators, the cold case investigators thought that Doug Bradford committed the murder. But, just like the original investigators, they couldn't connect Bradford to the murder. In the years after Lynn's death, Bradford started a successful tech company and he got married and had children. In December 2007, the lead detective had an idea and it was based on the garrote. It was such an unusual weapon, and he started to think about how it was constructed. The two wooden dowels were cut from a broom or a mop handle. Why would the killer cut up a broom or mop handle? Why not just buy two wooden dowels? Also, it turned out that the broom handle had been blue, but the color had been sandpapered off of it. Only tiny flecks of paint were left behind. Also, the wire between the two dowels had been doubled. This was done to ensure it was strong enough to garrote Lynn. Why didn't the killer just get stronger wire? The detective concluded that the killer simply used materials that were available to him. The detective wondered, was it possible that the same wire and the rest of the broom might be in the house where Douglas Bradford lived at the time of the murder? When Lynn was murdered, Bradford lived with his parents. In the nearly 2.5 decades since the murder, Bradford's father had died, but his mother lived in the same house. So he got a warrant and searched the house. He knew it was a long shot, but he thought it was a chance worth taking. In the garage, he found an old wooden broom handle that had been cut. He collected it as evidence. He also learned that Bradford's mom was an avid oil painter. Bradford and his late father used to frame the paintings. So the detective collected a few framed paintings. The broomstick and the dowels were sent to a special lab in Illinois. To the detective's astonishment, the dowels used in the garrote did not come from the broomstick. Undeterred, the detective began to investigate Bradford's alibi. It did not make sense to any of the investigators that Bradford would go out alone at night in a 30-foot boat that weighed 2 tons and had no motor. The detective learned that it was not windy on the night of Lynn's murder. So why would Bradford choose to go sailing that night? The detective talked to other sailors and they said if the wind weren't strong, they would have never taken out that boat at night. The detective looked at all the bookings from the boat company from 1979 to 2007. Only one person took that boat out after sunset. That was Douglas Bradford on the night that Lynn was murdered. Then the police got DNA samples from all of Lynn's ex-boyfriends and male friends. This included Doug Bradford. None of their DNA matched the DNA found at the crime scene. So the detective felt like he was back at square one. Then the lead investigator looked at the back of the oil paintings that they collected from Bradford's mother's home. He noticed that the wire used to hang the frames was the exact same wire used to make the garrote. It was grade number 1 8-strand braided wire. It turned out that type of wire is very rare. Out of all the wires sold for hanging pictures, it accounts for only 1-6% of sales. The lead investigator thought that based on the wire and Bradford's odd alibi, that they had enough of a case to charge Bradford with murder. The district attorney agreed, and in May 2007, Douglas Bradford was arrested for the first-degree murder of Lynn Knight. To defend him, Bradford hired high-profile lawyer Robert Shapiro. Shapiro had a lot of famous clients, but his most famous was O.J. Simpson. In 1995, Shapiro helped Simpson get acquitted of two murders. Shapiro tried to get the case against Bradford dismissed. As a result of his appeals, the case didn't go to trial until July 2014, 7 years after Bradford was arrested. The prosecution didn't have a single piece of evidence that connected Bradford to the murder. Instead, they argued that all the circumstantial evidence proved that Bradford was the killer. Richard Frank testified that he saw Bradford fly into a rage at Lynn's home. Lynn's sister, Donna, testified that her family didn't receive any condolences from Bradford after the murder. Several sailing experts also testified. They said it would have been very unlikely that Bradford could have been out sailing that night based on the wind conditions. It would have also been incredibly difficult for one man to paddle a boat that size back to the dock from the open water. Robert Shapiro pointed out that no physical evidence proved that Bradford committed the murder. His fingerprints, blood, and DNA were not found at the crime scene. Also, no witnesses saw him near Lynn's apartment on the night of the murder. The trial lasted for 6 weeks. The jury deliberated for 3 days. Douglas Bradford was found guilty of first-degree murder. Nearly 35 years to the day of Lynn Knight's murder, her case was finally closed. In December 2014, 62-year-old Douglas Bradford was sentenced to 25 years to life. At the time of this recording, 69-year-old Douglas Bradford is serving a sentence at the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo, California. The earliest he'll be able to apply for parole is July 2030 when he's 78 years old. Bradford has always claimed he is innocent. Lynn Knight's family was thankful that the case was finally solved. Her sister Donna feels that now her soul can rest.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you. This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.